Hello and welcome to this week's Green Shoots, a history of Irish football with me, Caelan Kerwin, and Gary Spain. Coming up on this week's show, we're talking about the First Division, its origins and its time through the 1980s, the decade when it began. Don't forget to share the show on your social media channels to let more people find out about the history and heritage of Irish football. Turn on notifications on whatever podcast platform you use so that you get notified straight away when a new episode drops. Now, First Division football has been around from the mid-1980s, often seen as the League of Ireland's graveyard and at times notoriously difficult to get out of. So how did it all begin and who are the key teams and moments of it during the 1980s? And I suppose, Gary, let's start off by talking about where the First Division comes from and when it began.
Yeah, it's crazy. You're actually going back over 40 years at this point, but it doesn't seem that long ago. So, I mean, the League of Ireland I grew up with, and I think, well, you have to be a certain vintage now, but let's say going back to the 70s, for what I can remember of the league, it was 14 teams. I appreciate there were fewer teams than that when the likes of Drogheda, I mean, it's before my time when the likes of Drogheda joined in the 60s. But in the 1970s, the League of Ireland was 14 teams. You played each other home and away. There were 26 games. And the big thing was the FAI Cup. So for most teams, the season come February was almost over. And suddenly the FAI Cup is on the scene. You have a chance of winning a trophy. You might sign a player or two, bring someone in from England. And that's a bit of hype. But once you went out of the Cup, your season was over. Players ended up getting released. And the last few games of the season were a bit of a drag. We went to 16 teams in 1977 when Thurles Town and Galway Rovers joined. But by 1982, the league had gone back, if I remember correctly, to 14 teams when Thurles Town left and Cork United went out of football. So you'd actually no team in Cork at all. So this is just to set the scene, because for the 1984-85 season, the league had gone back to 16 teams when Cork City had joined and Longford Town had joined the league, the famous old cup fighters from the 30s into the 50s, into the 70s, the famous wins over Sligo Rovers, etc., got to a cup semi-final, but they finally joined the league in 1984 to bring it up to 16 teams. And at 16, there was still no jeopardy that if you were out of the cup, your season was still over. But a decision was made to expand the league to 22 teams and to create two divisions. So from the end of 84-85 season, the Premier Division was going to go from 16 to 12. And there was going to be a new First Division with the four relegated clubs. And I'm going to say six new clubs, but technically Monaghan United were playing in the League of Ireland B division at the time. But the new clubs to come in were the likes of Bray Wanderers from Bray, a first League of Ireland side in Bray since the 1940s when Bray Unknowns had gone out. Derry City, who we will go on and talk about because they're a huge part of this all on their own. The likes of Cove Ramblers came in, a second team in Cork. So we'd gone from no team in Cork in 1984 to having two. Newcastle United from Limerick, as they were at the time from Newcastle West. Monaghan United, as I said, came in from the B division. And the brilliantly named Emfa from Kilkenny, who were they were formed by the great Jimmy Rattigan, from players from, is it Emmett Place and Fatima Street? Or it's certainly Emmett and Fatima. The first two letters of Emmett and Fatima made up the name Emfa. They played in claret and blue in the Aston Villa or Burnley colours, whatever you want to call it. So they joined the league as well. So a lot of new additions. It certainly made the 84-85 season incredibly tense and incredibly exciting, because the relegation battle, say it went to the final day, it went beyond the final day, because in those days, all the games didn't have to finish at the same time. So, unfortunately, the likes of Longford Town were long since cut adrift and sure to be relegated. Finn Harps had fallen away as well. Drogheda United, Sligo Rovers, Shelburne, even the likes of St. Pat's, Home Farm. I remember Cork City being in the battle without being too much under threat. But a couple of crucial games on the last day for them. Sligo Rovers went to Drogheda, and Drogheda had to win to have any hope of survival. They were 3-0 up, and Sligo pulled off an incredible comeback to earn a 3-3 draw, which seemed to be enough to earn their survival. But Shelburne still had one game to go away to Galway, and because of the fixtures, because Galway had reached, well, they'd reached the FAI Cup semi-final, which had gone to a replay against Limerick, which I definitely don't want to talk about. And Galway then had to play in the Cup final, and they also had a back match against the champions. I think Shamrock Rovers were already champions at that stage. So if I remember correctly, they played Shamrock Rovers in the run-up to the Cup final in a totally nothing game. But they had a home game against Shelburne after the Cup final. And basically, Sligo Rovers had long since finished their season. Shelburne had to win to survive on goal difference. Any other result meant that Shelburne were relegated. So Galway had got to the Cup final, lost to Shamrock Rovers, had qualified for Europe for the first time. And they were actually, unfortunately, missing their player manager and key goalkeeper, Tom Lally, a great goalkeeper, had been around the league for many years. And they were also missing Eamon Deasy, a key player as well. Notwithstanding that, and roared on by quite a few Sligo Rovers fans who had travelled down from Sligo for the game, Galway were 2-0 up. I know Johnny Glynn got one of the goals. Galway 2-0 up and seemingly in total control. And Shelburne pulled off, well, what can only describe as an incredible comeback to win 3-2 and to relegate Sligo. And it seems very unfair looking back now that this was played weeks after the season had finished. But that was the way it was. And Shelburne stayed up, and Sligo Rovers got relegated for the new First Division.
Yeah, so it's am I right in saying it's Drogs, Finarps, Longford and Sligo are the ones that go down to the new First Division?
Exactly. And as we said, the six new clubs that came in, but we have to talk about Derry City because they're the biggest story, and I appreciate they didn't win the division, but let's talk about Derry City first, because we had talked on a previous Irish League podcast. Yeah. So they'd gone out of football in 1972. Obviously, an incredible football city and remains so to this day. But they had no senior football for 13 years. And with a lot of support from Fran Fields, actually, of Finn Harps, it was arranged and it was agreed that they could join the League of Ireland. And they were certainly a breath of fresh air when they came into the League of Ireland. And what they brought was massive crowds and a brilliant atmosphere. So
to go back in a previous podcast, just to kind of go over a little bit of the history, they're removed, or they're kicked out from the Northern Ireland Football League, as it was back then, because of crowd trouble, etc. And then they're out for 13 years. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, so they actually resigned. So to go back on some of the history, so there had been a lot of issues in the Brandywell. People probably know its location, but it's certainly in a very nationalist or Republican area in the Bogside. So a Ballymena bus had actually been burned out, and they had been forced to play home games in Coleraine. And in 1972, there was a vote on whether Derry City would be allowed to go back to the Brandywell. And I don't want to do any clubs wrong, but if I remember correctly, Ballymena voted, and Portadown certainly voted to go back to the Brandywell. And some of the other clubs voted against. And the big disappointment for Derry City was that Coleraine actually abstained on the vote, which resulted in Derry being refused permission to go back to the Brandywell. And in 1972, if I remember correctly, the directors of the club felt they had no option but to withdraw from the Irish League, that there was no future playing in Coleraine, 30 miles away in front of small crowds. So they withdrew from the Irish League. There were plenty of attempts for them to get back. There was also a Derry United in the 70s that tried to get in. There was quite a few attempts to bring senior football back from the Irish League point of view. But as we went into the 1980s, it was felt there was no real prospect of that. And thoughts turned to the League of Ireland. And as I said, it was Fran Fields was a major driver in this. And there was, I remember Friendly played in 1984. Shamrock Rovers went to the Brandywell and played in front of a massive crowd.
Yeah, I hadn't realized they had been in the wilderness for so long. I thought it was maybe a couple of seasons or whatever, but it's over a decade. I didn't realize it was so long.
Yeah. It was 13 years. Wow. And I mean, there were some hugely talented players. I mean, look, the likes of Brendan Bradley, the greatest, well, the all-time League of Ireland leading goal scorer, although he probably will be forever. I think, well, probably, but he certainly, I mean, he finished his career, if I remember correctly, at Derry City, or certainly played in the latter point. But I mean, a lot of Brendan's goals were scored for Finn Harps, and Finn Harps are one of the clubs that benefited greatly from, there were a lot of Derry men on the team that won the Cup in 1974. The great Tony O'Doherty was on that team. Went to Coleraine, won the Irish Cup with Coleraine in 1975. Felix Healy, great player. He obviously starred in the Derry treble winning team, but he played with Coleraine. He went to the 82 World Cup with Northern Ireland. And so there was huge talent always being produced in the city, but there were 13 years with no senior football. And obviously the likes of Finn Harps, Coleraine in particular, they benefited from this. But so it was fantastic to see senior football back in 1985. And there was such an appetite for it that there were incredible. I mean, the Brandywell was sold out, 12,000 capacity, pretty much every game. And there were people locked out every other Sunday. And there was the crowds that traveled to away games in those days were simply phenomenal.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And the great Jim McLaughlin, of course, arrives on the scene and changes everything as well on top of that, which was fantastic, which we'll obviously talk about in later podcasts. But absolutely brilliant time for Derry City. They're back in League of Ireland. They are. So we should point out as well, by the way, that promotion is 1-2. It's not playoffs like it is now, correct?
Yeah, so there were no playoffs in those days. For 85-86, you had a 12-team Premier Division. You had a 10-team First Division, and it was two up and two down. And it was as simple as that, no playoffs. Yeah.
So we're starting the league, the very, very first Division. How does it go? Do we know, is it even possible to have favourites of who's going to go up and who's going to go up if we're all kind of fumbling around kind of new football clubs and football clubs that are being built and et cetera?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to, as you say, it's hard to know. You had new clubs coming in, you had the likes of Monaghan coming from the B Division. Of course, you had the relegated clubs, the likes of Sligo Rovers, Drogheda United, Finn Harps were maybe, I mean, Longford Town were still a new club, even though they played one Premier Division season. But it was tough to tell who the favourites would be. I mean, Derry City with the crowds and the money behind them were certainly highly fancied as well.
We should say as well that
it's hard to know though, yeah.
Yeah, it's got a great geographical spread as well, which obviously was perhaps the thought process behind it too. But it does have a great geographical spread, you know, as you look at it, Kilkenny, Monaghan, Limerick, you know, Donegal, Cork, you know, so Longford, you know, like, so Sligo. So it's got this kind of great spread, you know, around the country as well.
Yeah, I mean, that was certainly I think it was definitely part of the thought process for the new First Division and bring in the new clubs, was to spread the League of Ireland around to new areas. I mean, I'm old enough to remember the League of Ireland going to places like Galway. I mean, there was no League of Ireland football in Galway until 1977. Kilkenny, obviously, well, unfortunately, we don't have League of Ireland football in Kilkenny today, but it was seen, I mean, Kilkenny was a major black spot as well. So it was bringing it to places like as you say, to Monaghan, etc. So there was a great geographical spread. And say, unfortunately, we don't have League of Ireland football in Monaghan today either. But it was a good spread around the whole country, and it was I think it had to be seen as a positive.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, 100%. So 1-2 get promoted to the Premier Division. How does this kind of season kind of span out with all these kind of names, some new, some not so new?
It does vary. I mean, obviously, the Bray Wanderers, I have to give them fully credit. They're, obviously, the club had existed for quite a long time. They had been founded back in the 1950s, playing, well, whatever, non-league, Leinster League, junior football, etc. So they won the first division in their very first season. They only lost one game, fully deservedly champion. Sligo Rovers hot on their heels, a point behind. So they got promotion. Longford Town were probably the closest to pushing, but there was a little bit of a gap. I know Derry City, I mean, a lot of fans would have wanted Derry to do well. They had gone on some good runs, and I mean, I have to talk about one particular game, and you talk about the way teams do well and do badly. I mean, Emfa ended up rock bottom. They only won one game all season. Monaghan, Newcastle West, or Newcastle United as they were then, didn't really impress too much. But Derry had been on a bit of a run in December of 1985. I think it won four games on the trot, and the weather had been pretty bad. There was snow, and all the games were off except one. And it was Derry City at home to Emfa. They got volunteers in. They cleared the snow off the Brandywell pitch. This was seen, get another win on the board, put pressure on the leaders. And in one of the biggest shock of the season, Emfa went to the Brandywell, their only win of the season. They beat Derry City 1-0 in front of over 6,000 people in the snow. And unfortunately for Derry City and all their efforts in getting the game on, it was the hammer blow to their promotion hopes. That win for Emfa proved to be their only win of the season.
Yeah, that's a huge win though, isn't it? I mean, I suppose Derry City would probably be seen as maybe an untested powerhouse, if you want to put it that way. They had huge crowds. They had a big city kind of behind them all the way, and then this upstart kind of appears out of nowhere and takes the win.
Yeah, I mean, because I remember actually going to a couple. I mean, obviously, I was supporting Limerick at the time, but I was also in college in Cork at the time, and Derry were the glamour team of that division. They were the powerhouse. I actually went to Newcastle United against Derry City, which, if I remember, was around November 85. And I stayed in Cork the weekend that Derry were coming to Cove, which, if I remember correctly, was the last game of the season. And even though it was a nothing game, they had over 300 fans down in Cove for that game, with nothing at stake, season already over. They were the powerhouse. They were the glamour team of the division. They were bringing big crowds wherever they went. And the also thing they were bringing was sterling, because I certainly remember in those days, the Irish pound was worth maybe 15 or 20% less than the British pound. But obviously, any place was happy to accept sterling. And any of the clubs, I mean, I know some of the Derry fans looking back probably felt a bit ripped off, but if they came in with sterling, they were given change in Irish punts, and but it was taken as one for one. And certainly clubs like Monaghan and Longford, etc., that they got even bigger crowds because they were that bit closer. Still quite a journey from Derry, but it was a bit closer to home. And they saw huge crowds. But I even remember that Newcastle United game. There was a huge crowd standing around the pitch in the Domain in those days. And I mean, all you could do, there was no seats. You just stood around the grass pitch. It was kind of roped off or whatever, just to, but I mean, the crowds were three and four deep. And it was mainly Derry City fans in Newcastle West in November 1985, standing around a pitch watching a League of Ireland game.
I'm going to state the obvious or ask the obvious question, but there's no tiered seating. There's no grass banks. This is pure football, is it?
This is just standing around a field. It's like junior football. Somebody with a better memory might correct me, but my memory of going to the Domain, and we used to go out, if Limerick were away and my dad and myself weren't going to it, maybe some of the longer trips, the fact that Newcastle West, we'd always drive out to Newcastle West, but we made a point of going to the two Derry City games in 85-6 and 86-7. I can't remember where Limerick were away. We were at home on alternate Sundays. I can't remember where Limerick were playing, but we certainly made a point of going to the Derry City games because they were the glamour games at the time. And I did stay in Cork the weekend of the Cove Derry City game. I don't know if especially for that because it was the end of the season. But Derry were the glamour team. They were the team you wanted to see, and they were the ones bringing the crowds, bringing the atmosphere. They had the likes of Owen De Gama, quality player that he was. In the first season in the first division, they did actually win the first division shield. They beat Longford in a two-legged final. And that even had brought brilliant atmosphere, brilliant crowds. I know Longford moved the game to the showgrounds in Sligo. They moved their home tie. And he was to cash in, obviously, on the... Because Abby Carton wasn't much... Longford were playing in Abby Carton in those days. And again, I don't think there was any grass banks. It was a wooden... So the pitch was properly... sealed off, and there was a wooden fence around the pitch, but there might have been a bit of a grass bank. Trying to remember, I was there a few times for Limerick. It certainly wasn't much of a venue when they moved, before they moved to Strokestown Road or the whatever it's called now, City Calling Stadium, is it? I could get the sponsor wrong, apologies, but it's obviously a far, far better ground now. But Abby Carton was in the town centre. There wasn't a lot, didn't have a lot going for it. So they moved the Shield final to the showgrounds, obviously cashing in. But Derry did win the First Division Shield, but they finished fourth in the First Division. And after that Enfield defeat, never really threatened for promotion.
Yeah, they lost, I think, 2-0 at home to Sligo in mid-November as well, which probably... When you look back at it, hindsight, of course, but that's the promotion rival with a massive win up in the Brandywell as well, which was huge. And I don't want to fixate on Derry City too much, obviously, but they did make a great start to the season from that. I think they had something like 4 or 5 wins out of the first 6 or 7 games or something like that. So they made a flyer. They just couldn't string it all together throughout the season.
Yeah, and I mean, they had that run as well before the Enfa game. I think it was 4 wins on the bounce, and Enfa would have made it 5. But I mean, so yeah, the Sligo game is fair comment in November. Had they beaten Enfa, who knows, they might have gone on a late run as well. But I think, look, the league table rarely lies, and Bray Wanderers finished top. Sligo Rovers finished a point behind. And given how unfortunate Sligo Rovers were to be relegated, it's maybe poetic justice that they went up, and of course Shelburne actually went down.
Yeah. It's interesting as well, because you mentioned it's been 40 years. I saw a tweet out, I think it was the other day, it might have actually been from Bray Wanderers Football Club account anyway, but it was, they had a group of, I think it was 4 or 5 players, and they were all kind of sitting around, obviously maybe doing a podcast or doing a TV interview or whatever, but they were all, they were kind of talking about that it was the celebration of their very first game in the first division and all that kind of history. So it's still good that it's remembered now as a great kind of moment in Bray Wanderers history too.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, you know, some of the legends in that photograph, the likes of Pat Devlin, Vincent Kerwin, they're still going. But I mean, it has to be remembered, Bray were founded in the 1950s, and I probably might struggle a little bit in the history in the 70s, but there was a bit of a merger between the Bray Unknowns club that had played in the League of Ireland up to 1943 and the Bray Wanderers club that were playing at the time. And of course, Bray Wanderers playing in the FAI Cup. Remember they played Shelburne in the 50s. They qualified a couple of times. It wasn't as if senior football was a new thing in Bray, but certainly this was a new beginning in 1985. And they've obviously had 40 years of service, had some great successes. They've won two FAI Cups. That's they've right. played in Europe. So, I mean, look, 40 years and they're still in the promotion playoffs at the moment. As we talk,
absolutely,
they could be back in the Premier Division for 2026. So it's been very successful in the Carlisle grounds.
Yeah.
Without a doubt, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of those kind of older gentlemen, as we discussed earlier, are still very much part of the Bray Wanderers setup, very, very, very much part of the Bray Wanderers club. History is only around the corner in Bray.
No, absolutely. And I think younger gentlemen might be in some of us can't even forgive Pat Devlin for scoring the winning goal for Dalkey United in the Markets Field in 1976, which was a mere few years ago, you know.
A grudge still firmly held.
No, I mean, hats off. Pat's a fantastic League of Ireland man, and unfortunately, no complaints that day. The better team won.
Absolutely, yeah. So 85-86, Bray and Sligo are up into the Premier Division. And then next season, 86-87 then, this is an interesting season. It's the one where we see kind of Derry, I suppose, into the promised land.
Yeah, so I mean, Derry had brought great crowds, great atmosphere. They'd won the Shield the year before, but it was just kind of felt that they'd missed out on promotion. But it was never any doubt in 86-87. They just totally dominated the league. It was never in doubt from the start. They drew one, lost one, but they won every other game. Won the league at a canter from Shelburne, who also went up. It wasn't that close, really, from promotion. EMFA did pick up a few wins and managed to finish ahead of Longford at the bottom. But it was Derry City still playing to big crowds that got into the promised land, that got into the Premier Division. And Shelburne, having avoided relegation, got relegated, and they'd come straight back up as well. And but 86-87 will be remembered as the year of Derry City. Newcastle United did change their name to Newcastle West as a smaller side.
In case they were getting confused with the Geordies, was it?
Yeah, I mean, they did play in black and white as well, so they did wear the same colours, but a slightly more famous club in the northeast of England.
So a great season for Derry City. They're back in the promised land. Jim McLaughlin has got them there. And another kind of fantastic season for him and Derry City. We're going to move on now to 87-88. And, well, judging by the league table alone, it's a bit of a nail-biter.
Well, it's a nail-biter for the top spot as Athlone Town just pipped Cove Ramblers. But both of them were comfortable enough in the promotion stakes. A bit of a gap back to Finn Harps and Home Farm, even another gap back. So I suppose promotion was the big one, but it was nice for Athlone Town to go straight back up, having been relegated. I mean, this is a club that had won two league titles in the 1980s. So to go down in 1987 in Rathbone, actually, I think Limerick relegated them in a bit of a relegation four-pointer at the end of 86-87 season. But Athlone were back straight back up as champions in 1988. Cove Ramblers getting to play in the Premier Division for the first time. It was a big deal for them to come second. Enfield were back in bottom spot behind Newcastle West on goal difference, but they did win seven games. It's probably worth pointing out as well that the first division had gone from home and away, just 18 games, to 27 games for 87-88 season, so a lot more matches involved. And it was a lot more competitive, I suppose, as well, that even though Athlone were well, comfortable for promotion by 6 points. They did actually lose 7 games. Cove lost 6 games. So, I mean, there were teams, everyone beating everyone else, and the bottom teams, Enfa and Newcastle West and indeed Monaghan, all won at least 7 games. So everybody was a bit more competitive. Not a lot of jeopardy in 87, 88 with Athlone and Cove going straight up. It was a bit different the following year.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you as well, just briefly, we see Home Farm appear.
So Home Farm had been in the Premier Division, so they were relegated. In fact, 86-87 was a bit of a nail-biter for Limerick because Billy Hamilton had taken over as player-manager, but the league form hadn't really improved. And I remember an absolutely crucial game in Talca Park where Brian Flynn, he didn't stay long in Limerick, but he scored a crucial goal in a 1-0 win away to Home Farm. And then, as I said, that 3-1 home win over Athlone, which I think it relegated Athlone on the day. Forgive me if I got that one wrong. It certainly ensured Limerick's survival, but it was a very, very nervy win in Rathbone. So it was Home Farm and Athlone that had got relegated at the end of 87. Limerick surviving, but Home Farm weren't able to go straight back up in 87-88.
Yeah, so 87-88, Athlone and Cove are up into the Premier Division. And we move to 88 and 89, and this one's a bit of a close one as well. Not that much separating the top four.
No, I mean, Drogheda had, a bit to spare. I mean, look, another great club joined the league in the 1960s, had a bit of bad luck, they would say, in cup finals in 71, losing to Limerick after a replay and losing to Bowes in 76. Did get into Europe in the 80s, but then spent... They got relegated into the new first division and took a few years to get out of it. So football was in a bit of the doldrums in Drogheda in the late 1980s. I suppose that season is one that hurts. I keep dragging this back to a Limerick point of view, but Drogheda actually, they knocked Limerick out of the cup in a replay in United Park, in one that still rankles, and that not from any bad refereeing, or it was just one of those bad luck that Limerick absolutely battered them in Rathbone for 90 minutes, couldn't score, drew 0-0, went up to United Park. Declan Hyde scored in the first minute, went through another 45 minutes of battering them, and Drogheda came out in the second half, scored 3 goals and knocked Limerick out. But they also won the first division at a canter, to get back to the Premier Division. But the second promotion spot was an incredible finish. And it's one, again, it's probably looking back, it seems so unfair at the time, or so unfair now, but everyone didn't play on the final day. So it was a battle between UCD, Bray Wanderers and Finn Harps right up to the end, and UCD had finished their campaign. Bray had a game left, Finn Harps had a game left, and either of them could have leapfrogged UCD for the last promotion spot. They blew it. I mean, Finn Harps went down to Newcastle West, who had finished, well, the only reason they finished second bottom was because they beat Finn Harps, who ultimately, as it turned out, a win would have given Finn Harps promotion, but they didn't realise it at the time because Bray Wanderers, who had gone on a great run in the FAI Cup, their last game in Monaghan in early April had been postponed. And because they were still in the FAI Cup, they were still in the Leinster Cup, and the FAI Cup semi-final. So I think they had to play a quarter-final. They knocked out Drogheda, if I remember correctly, in the quarter-final. Because Limerick had a run to the final that included Bray and Cork City. They had a double-legged semi-final against Cork City. They won the first leg in Turner's Cross, and they unfortunately lost at home in they conceded 3 goals to lose in the return leg. But their league game against Monaghan to ensure promotion got postponed for about 3 weeks. They had so many cup ties and everything else to play out. So they went to I'm pretty sure Monaghan would have been at that point in Cork to Keegan. Could be wrong. Maybe they were still in Belgium Park. Anyway, they went to Monaghan to have a chance. They needed a win for promotion. Went to goal down early on, equalised quite quickly, and in a very nervy performance against a Monaghan team that had absolutely nothing to play for. Down near the bottom, they finished seventh. Monaghan held on for a one-all draw. That meant UCD got promotion, and Bray had to spend another season and another couple of seasons, as it turned out, in the First Division. So the last full season in the First Division in the 1980s saw Drogheda go up as champions, and UCD, over 3 weeks after they finished their season, ended up being promoted when I think, in reality, most UCD fans would have given up all hope. They would have expected Finn Harps to beat Newcastle West, and they certainly would have expected Bray Wanderers to beat Monaghan. And if either of those had won, UCD would have stayed in the First Division, but they somehow, sitting on the beach or sitting in college, well, not on the beach, studying for their exams in college, they earned promotion to the Premier Division.
Rather affluent students of UCD studying on the beaches. But I wanted to ask you as well about Sligo Rovers, because they get relegated from the Premier Division, and they end up rock bottom of the First Division as well. So it's a bit of a nightmare period for Sligo Rovers.
Yeah, so it's probably in another podcast we'll go on and talk about the 1990s, but certainly the 1980s ended very badly for Sligo Rovers. As you said, they finished rock bottom of the First Division in 1989. And unfortunately, it's probably, if you look back on the history of Sligo Rovers, even we go into the 50s or the 60s, there were many seasons when they had to apply for re-election, but they still kept the club alive. And yeah, 1989, they finished rock bottom of the First Division. So it was tough times for Sligo Rovers.
Yeah, absolutely. Very interesting in terms of, I suppose, looking back and seeing them fall so far down. Interesting stories to see how that might have happened. We're going to go on to our last league season then of the 80s, so 89-90 as well. This is interesting from the point of view of, talk to us about this first season as well, because this is another very, very tight season.
Yeah, so I mean, Waterford had been relegated, obviously another famous name. They had won the sixth league between the 60s and the 70s. So they'd ended up in the first division. Sligo Rovers had come back from rock bottom. And it was a funny season. I mean, Waterford, so Sligo and Waterford ended up getting promoted. They held off Bray Wanderers and Kilkenny City, as they had been a name change from EMFA. Waterford actually did it by, they didn't have a good record against the top four, but they were almost perfect against the bottom six, and they dropped very few points in their 18 games against the bottom six, but in their 9 games against the rest of the top four, they didn't do so well. But it was enough to leave them level on points with Sligo Rovers, who had probably had a more balanced season. It was also a funny one in that we had a playoff. We didn't have promotion and relegation playoffs, but in those days you couldn't win the title on goal difference. So Waterford and Sligo Rovers played off for the First Division title, and Waterford ended up as champions by virtue of winning the playoff against Sligo, even though they hadn't done so well in the league games against Sligo over the season. But they did score, I think it was 58 goals. So Sligo Rovers had got promotion based on their defence. They'd only conceded 12. They'd only scored 30. So Waterford did have a better goal difference. They'd scored 58 but conceded 28. Waterford winning the league based on the playoff and certainly banging the goals in, and Sligo were certainly keeping them out at the back. It's probably also notable for it was the last season that there were two clubs in Limerick, because Newcastle West left the league at the end of the 1989-90 season, went back to playing in the Desmond League.
You have two kind of different stories that kind of intertwined at the same time. When at the start of, we talked about the 85-86 season, and there was EMFA and Newcastle United, as it was then. They obviously changed it to Newcastle West by this time. But there's, you've now got Kilkenny City, who are up in fourth place, you know, just behind Bray Wanderers, level on points, 35-35. So they've had a name change. They've kind of they've kind of gone upwards, and they've gone up the table, etc. Things have really improved at Kilkenny, whereas it didn't at Newcastle. And so we see them kind of, I suppose, peter out from, I suppose, consistently being in the, what, the bottom two, bottom three for the past five seasons.
Yeah, and I mean, I should point out as well, Kilkenny City changed their colours as well. I think it was around the same time as the name change. Yeah. So they went from EMFA in claret and blue to Kilkenny City in black and amber, which, of course, are the famous Kilkenny GAA colours. Yeah. So I think it was an effort to get support from around the city, or even the whole county of Kilkenny, which I suppose still remains hurling as top dog in Kilkenny. I say top dog is probably the only sport. Well, the junior football is actually quite strong in Kilkenny. There's still teams like Evergreen, etc. I'm sure there's other big teams that are... But Kilkenny clubs are making an impact in the FAI Junior Cup. And I would hope to see senior football back in Kilkenny in the years to come. It's for such a big place, a big county, a big city. It should be able to sustain senior football, even if hurling is always going to be the number one sport, I suppose, in the area.
Well, I mean, you know, you look at Kerry as well. You'd say Kerry is GA football stronghold. You're never going to get any other sport being successful there. I know it hasn't necessarily told in the league table for Kerry, but at the same time, they are making a good effort at trying to, you know, bring on a football club and promote a football club and bring a football club up in an area that's essentially a GAA stronghold.
Yeah, but in fairness, there was always kind of a football tradition in Kerry as well. I mean, Tralee had a strong football tradition. Killarney had some great clubs like Killarney Celtic, Killarney Athletic, Listowel. There was strong football tradition there. There was underage internationals played down in Kerry long before they had the League of Ireland scene. And look, hats off to them. They got to the Cup semi-final. Okay, it mightn't show in their league position, but they've been incredibly competitive this season. And I know they've beaten Treaty and probably should have beaten Treaty again, only for a 90th minute equaliser. So they've had I think actually Kerry will be quite strong next season, would certainly challenge for the playoffs. Colin Healy's done an incredible job there. But I suppose Kilkenny City, they struggled to ever make an impact. They did get up to the Premier Division, but they struggled to attract the crowds. And maybe it was Buckley Park is that little bit out of the town. It's a few miles out of the city. Sorry, the city. It's a bit hard to get to. You really need a car. I know, let's say, the underage teams were playing. Is it... I keep getting these mixed up because the Derrymuir Park and Tennypenny Park as well that was there. The League of Ireland ground is Buckley Park, which was a fine facility. I know if you keep going on past Buckley Park now, I think that's Derrymuir Park that you get the current where the underage stuff is being played as well. So there is fine facilities there. There is a tradition there. So hopefully we will have League of Ireland football back in Kilkenny in the not too distant future, hopefully in the third tier when that comes in.
Yeah, I think we might, we need to do a podcast on stadium names, because some of them sound absolutely glorious as well, and where those names come from as well. So the final look at the 80s in the first division is Waterford, Sligo, an interesting enough, Bray Wanderers find themselves in the Cup Winners' Cup.
a funny one with the League of Ireland, because there were quite a lot of shocks. So Bray Wanderers just missed out on promotion, but in a very, very famous FAI Cup final and two incredible semi-finals in that, St. Francis, Bray shocked Derry City and St. Francis shocked Bowes. It was all set up for Derry City had won the treble the year before. It was all set up for a Bohemians Derry City final. And we ended up with St. Francis, non-league team from the Liberties in Dublin, and Bray Wanderers, the First Division Bray Wanderers. So Bray, they won the Cup 3-0. John Ryan got a hat-trick. First man since Maya Dennehy, who had been the first man to score a hat-trick in the 1972 FAI Cup final. Bray Wanderers, they won the FAI Cup, and they ended up in the Cup Winners' Cup in 1990 from the First Division.
Yeah, incredible. If it was around today, it could be Cork City that could be could have been in the Cup Winners' Cup, but we won't know. But you never know. But it's a fantastic look at the First Division as well, and kind of looking through some of those names as well that become familiar now in Irish football. Some of them so familiar and not familiar because they're not there anymore. But still, at the same time, it's great to look back on a division, dare I say, that doesn't get the love, I think, from football fans in this country. I know it's second division football, but I feel sometimes it still doesn't get the kudos or the attention that it deserves sometimes.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is. Look, I've spent so many years of my life watching First Division football with Limerick and now with Treaty United. It is seen as a bit of a graveyard of the League of Ireland. And I suppose the Premier Division gets most of the attention, most of the eyeballs, most of the love. And look, if we're being honest, we all want to be in the Premier Division. It's where you want to be. You don't want to be playing in the First Division. And unfortunately, I've watched, as I said, far too much First Division football. I could be an expert on the First Division, maybe not so much on the Premier Division, that I don't get to see that much Premier Division football anymore. But it was a bit of a novelty in the late 1980s. But even back then, I think teams wanted to get out of it, and winning promotion was a big thing, and avoiding relegation, obviously, as it remains to this day. And the First Division can be seen as a bit of a graveyard and a place to you don't want to be.
Yeah, I think it's also because, and we see even now in modern day first division, which is when you get in there, if you're coming down for the Premier Division down into it, it can sometimes be very difficult to get back out because it has become quite competitive within it, because obviously things change, players move out of a club, etc. And it is almost every weekend. It's not necessarily, you know, it's a guarantee that I suppose the front runners or the favorites, etc., are going to win games. It sometimes works quite the opposite way. So it is a division where you do find everybody can kind of beat everybody on any given day.
Yeah, and I mean, if you take the champions Dundalk, I mean, I think the only team they beat four times is actually the runners-up Cove Ramblers. Everybody else managed to take points off them. And there's only one promotion place as well, so one automatic place, and then otherwise you end up in the playoffs, which become a real minefield, and it's very difficult to get promotion. I think, particularly with the Premier Division being so competitive, and the ninth place Premier Division team will be incredibly strong, whoever it is, whether it's Waterford or Galway or Sligo, it will be a very strong side. And so it can be very difficult to get out of the First Division once you get sucked into it. And I suppose hats off to Dundalk to spend only one season and to go straight back up. But it will be very competitive, and Cork City are going to find that. Well, I suppose they're no strangers to the First Division, but they will find it next season. They'll be the team that everyone will want to beat. And obviously, they'll be hot favourites to win the First Division in 2026. But it won't be easy for them.
No, I'm not a fan of the promotion and relegation playoffs myself. I'm just going to put that out there. I think it takes away from people's efforts in both leagues as well. And look, I'm not going to get into it because that's my own point of view. I have lots of reasons why I don't like it. I'm not going to get into it now. That's a whole podcast of another day. But as ever, Gary, a trip down memory lane to the First Division, which often doesn't get talked about. We've talked a lot about the League of Ireland Premier Division, but not the First Division. So it was good foray into setting us up for going back there again.
Cheers, Kevin.
Well, that's it for this week's show. Don't forget you can go back and listen to previous shows that go through League of Ireland football through the decades, as well as international football for both the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland. There's something in there for everybody. And remember to support your local League of Ireland and Northern Ireland Football League club. It's our heritage. It's our game. Until next week, bye for now.